forward to this lectureship. As soon as I start back home, I begin looking forward to being able to come back and be with this lectureship the following year. Charles, he said he was going to lead that song, "Open Your Eyes and Be Alert," but maybe he couldn't find that one in the songbook. I know this is a difficult hour after we have eaten, but I hope our lesson at this hour will be of such that we can stay awake for this time. Go to sleep for the next time, but stay awake during this lesson. As I said, I'm glad to be here with you all. Debbie had planned, we'd made plans for months for her to come and be here with us this year. But we were leaving Friday morning. Thursday evening, about 5 o'clock, she called and said that our daughter-in-law, Brandy, was down sick. And, of course, they've got the new baby, about 3 months old, so she just could not come. So I'm sorry that she was not able to be here with me. But maybe the next time she'll be able to come and be here with me. Let me say one more thing. Jack had mentioned about the Online Academy of Biblical Studies. If you're not even getting on there and watching some of those lessons, some of those programs, you ought to, because it is a very fine program. My class that I'm teaching, I really need to say that Ted Thrasher and I have that class, because almost every Saturday before I log on to start my, I have to call him and say, "Now, how is it that I get on here so I can teach this lesson?" And he's very kind. He emails me back and he'll tell me how to do it, and he'll say, "This is number two now." So every time he has to tell me how to do it. But I appreciate those men who do that. And if you're not involved in that to some degree, get on there and join in those Bible studies, because they are beneficial to all. Let's look in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 now, verses 1 through 5. And we're going to be talking about a lesson on the family and Christian responsibility. Let's first read the text, and then we'll talk a little bit about the background of this text, and then we'll get into the body of our study. But to begin with, verse number 1, the Bible here says, "Now concerning the things whereof we wrote unto you, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband. Let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence, and likewise also the wife unto her husband. The wife hath not power of her own body, but the husband. And likewise also the husband hath not power of his own body, but the wife. Defraud ye not one the other, except it be with consent for a time, that ye may give yourselves to fasting and prayer, and come together again, that Satan tempt you not in your incontinency." Well, let's think about the background of this. Verse 5 is the verse we're going to be focusing on, but in verse 5, he really is answering what is stated in verse number 1. In verse number 1, he says there, "concerning the things whereof ye wrote unto me." So here was some questions that had been written and asked the Apostle Paul, and he's writing them, and he's giving them that answer. In fact, chapter 7 is dealing with the marriage issue. The first part of the chapter is dealing with those who are married, and then the latter part is dealing with those who are not married. In verse number 1, it said, "It is good for a man not to touch a woman." The word "touch" here refers to that intimate relationship that is solely to be had and enjoyed and be a part of a marriage. Nowhere else is that to be had. It is only to be in the marriage bond. Here it talks about that intimate relationship, and there are some restrictions upon it, because he talks about it's only for the husband and wife. Now, Paul is saying here that he is speaking this not by commandment. And some people say, well, that means that it is not something that has to be followed. No, that's not the case at all. Paul is simply saying here, this particular kind of information has not been addressed earlier or before. He says that it is better because of the present distress. Look at verse number 26 of this chapter. He says, I suppose, therefore, that it is good for the present distress. I say that it is good for a man so to be. Now, in that, he's saying, it is better if it's possible for an individual not to be married. Why? Because of persecution. Because of the great persecution was on the church. There was great difficulty in maintaining faithfulness. Paul, in this letter to the church at Corinth, is writing to correct some problems. This happens to be a problem that goes on around the city of Corinth. A lot of immoral things was taking place in that particular area. In fact, we'll talk about some of those in just a little bit as we get on down into the letter. But I want us to understand that Paul is not condemning marriage. He is just simply saying, because of the present situation, it's better that you not be married. But look it back into our text there in verses 1 through 5. He's talking here about how it's better not to touch or have that relationship. But if that be the case, that one cannot control themselves, he says, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife and every woman have her own husband. And then he goes on to talk about the due benevolence in this. Now, as I said, Paul is not saying that you should not be married as an absolute statement. Because in Hebrews chapter 13 and verse number 4, the Bible there speaks of the marriage bed being honorable in all. And the bed undefiled. He goes on in Ephesians chapter 5, verses 22 and following down through the end of that chapter, where he's speaking there very clearly about the husband and wife and their relationship one to another. How that they are to love one another, how that she is to submit herself to her husband, and on that goes in chapter 5. And we'll talk about that a little bit later in our study. But in this, what we want to observe is that exception. That's the point we have been studying thus far all week, and we'll continue. In that vein of understanding, here is an exception. Now then, what we're going to do in our lesson today, we're going to define some terms, number one. Number two, we're going to look at the immediate context of verses 1 through 5. And then number two, we're going to have an extended context, an extended learning concerning the principles that are found in verses 1 through 5. So let's begin by first of all defining some terms. To begin with, let's define the word defraud. The word defraud, and that's important for you to remember in our study today. It's important to keep in mind what the word defraud means, because we're going to take that and make application to our Christian responsibility and to our family responsibilities. The word defraud is a word that means to deprive. It's of separation, separation of the part from the whole. And it means by separation by distance in place or in time from Thayer's. One person said, it's this. The idea is you do not cheat nor hold back that which is due. In other words, it's saying we have to pay our own part, our own responsibility. Do not hold back, do not keep back that which is due, a situation. Now, in 1 Corinthians 6 and verse number 8, the Bible here says, nay, ye do wrong and defraud your own brother. He says there, in that context of that, he said, you don't take your brother to law. And then he comes to this point and he says, ye do wrong and defraud, and that your brethren. That's the same word, defraud. You do not carry out your responsibility. That which is due, something that we have that responsibility to carry out. It means to, we must not remove oneself from our responsibility. Defraud. Do not withhold yourself from your responsibility. Now, we'll talk about the immediate context in a few minutes. And then there's the word accept, which has been defined before, but Thayer says the word means unless, only. It is a term which permits in special circumstances. It's a term when there has been a restriction given. It is a word that gives permission for a special occasion. Except it be for. And then there is that which is given. You know, many examples could be found in the Bible, and there will be a lot of examples given this week. In fact, every lesson is going to be dealing with an exception to a statement that's made as a rule, as a law. But then there is the exception that's given. Just as we studied concerning last night, concerning the marriage, divorce, and remarriage. Except it be for fornication. A divorce must not be in place. One should not put away his wife except it be for fornication. What's the rule? What's the law? Don't put away your wife. Verse 6 says, what God has joined together, let not man put asunder. Don't divorce. Except it be for. And that's it. The one and only reason that one can do that. So there are a number of things that we'll be discussing this week. Now, what's the reason given for that exception? Well, the reason given is due to your incontinency or your inability to exercise self-control. And as this is being written by inspiration, there is an understanding of that desire, the fleshly desire that's there that God put within us, but it is to be held in check for certain circumstances, that being within the marriage bond. And he's talking here about how sometimes you must not defraud your mate. As I say, we'll talk about that in a minute, except for times of religious purposes. But all in all, here is the exception to the rule. That's the point we have to understand. Well, look at verse number 3. In verse number 3, we find the statement, let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence, and likewise also the wife unto the husband. What does the term due benevolence mean? Well, this word benevolence is found only one time in the New Testament, in the Bible. That's in this verse. And it means kindness, proper respect, or that which is due. That benevolence. Due benevolence, it says. The American Standard says her due. The word benevolence is not there. Her due. And that's speaking of that physical right given only to a married couple. One translation said this, let the husband give due kindness to his wife, and likewise the wife also to the husband. Understanding this, as we would begin to explain a situation such as this, as we would begin to try and explain this to people, we try with all of our might to say it in a way that is proper. Now, I would say this, explaining what we're talking about in a gentlemanly fashion, saying it in a way that can be understood, but it's not improper. Do benevolence. You take the word, her kindness or his kindness, that which is due. And in the context of this, as we'll see in a moment, it's talking about that relationship between a husband and a wife. I want you to turn with me to 1 Peter. In 1 Peter chapter 3, we'll read verses 5 through 7. And I believe in this we see a parallel to what we're talking about. Beginning there in verse number 5 of 1 Peter chapter 3, and after this manner in the old time, the holy women also who trusted in God adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husband, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well, and are not afraid with any amazement. Likewise, ye husband, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of God, that your prayers be not hindered. Now, in this passage, Christians ought to do their duty to one another, to their mates. And it ought to be done with a willing mind. That's what it's speaking of here. And in obedience to the commands of God. Wives should be in subjection to her husband. Notice what it says there in this, the latter part of verse number 6, where it says, and are not afraid with any amazement. That word amazement is translated from a word that means terror, fear, dread or fear. What's he saying? Well, this relationship ought to be such that both people are happy within it. Then in verse number 7, you're to dwell with her according to knowledge. Then in the last part, that your prayers be not hindered. That's how important that relationship is between husband and wife. I think sometimes men ought to stop and think about this particular passage when there are problems, when there are things that come up and there is maybe a treating of the wife in a way that they should not, in a demeaning manner. What does it say there? Your prayers are not heard when you conduct yourself like that. That's a serious matter, my brethren. It's a serious matter. When he talks here about due benevolence, he's talking about that which is due, that which is hers or his, that which is to be paid. Each of these definitions are important to the context of 1 Corinthians chapter 7. When you look, as I said there, at verses 3 through 5, in our lesson, we're going to look at an extended application. But to begin with, I want to look at the immediate context. So follow with me the immediate context. And the point here is, this was designed and given that they maintain their faithfulness in the church of Corinth. Why would there be a need for a question to be asked concerning this, and then for Paul to turn around and spend this entire chapter answering that question? Well, because the church was in an area, in a place, where there was a lot of immoral things. A lot of things were going on that were immoral. Now, on top of that, there was persecution. You take those two and put them together. And Paul is saying you need to make sure you maintain your faithfulness. And one of the ways that you have to, one of the things you have to be aware of is the fact that you must take care of one another's needs. Why? Because it's so immoral there. Things going on can pull one or the other away from that home relationship. In the city of Corinth, that was the temple of Venus, just as one example, where they had 1,000 women priests who were prostituting themselves in the name of religion. That's how immoral it was in that area. There were many vices. Well, here was the message to those to begin with in verse number 1. He's saying, if you're not married, it's better to be like I am. Don't be married. But because of your desires, it's better to have your own wife. He goes on now. What is the responsibility of the husband to his wife? Well, we have already made mention that this intimate relationship is to be had only in the marriage bond, no place else. That's why, in going back to our text, notice what he says there in verse number 2. He says, nevertheless, to avoid fornication, watch this, let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband. One man, one woman for life. That's what God intended. And that relationship was to be had only in that relationship, no place else. So, he comes to this and he's talking about this obligation, this responsibility that we have. The immediate context here has to do with that relationship. Verse number 4 tells us very clearly that the wife hath not power of her own body, but the husband, and likewise also the husband hath not power of his own body, but the wife. What's that saying? Well, when you enter into a marriage, in this situation, we're talking about that intimate relationship. The wife does not have power over her body, but the husband. The husband does not have power over his body, but the wife. What does that say? That says they have to be in mutual harmony concerning that. Or there's going to be great problems in the home. Now then, what's the point? Remember the immoral things that were going on? The availability of that sort of sin in that area? When one withholds that affection from the other, now listen carefully, it does not make it right for either one to go and do something they should not against their marriage. But the point here is, when that takes place, because of the desires, because as he said there, to avoid that burning, that lust, be married. Don't go outside of that. And you fulfill one another's desires in that. It's a responsibility. A responsibility one to the other. Now, the due benevolence. I want you to look at that again with me. The due benevolence. What does that mean again? Well, that means what is due, what is paid, is owed. What is owed must be paid. Why? Because I have no power over my own body. My wife has not power over her body, but we have that power over one another. And that's a great responsibility. A great responsibility. And when things begin to take place within a marriage, very often it focuses around that particular part of the marriage. Now, what I mean by that is usually there's where it all breaks down. And things begin to happen that should not happen. Now, look at verse 5. Defraud ye not one another, except it be with consent for a time, that ye may give yourselves to fasting and prayer, and come together again, that Satan tempt you not for your incontinency. That word means not having self-control. But look at what he says, defraud ye not one another. What does that mean? Do not hold back that which belongs to them. What do we say the word defraud meant? To hold back? To not pay that which is owed? We have responsibilities. When we enter into a marriage, there are certain responsibilities. And we're going to talk about some of them in just a little bit. But in this particular immediate context, we're talking about that relationship. When you enter into the marriage, there ought to be an understanding of this particular part of the marriage, rather than it being something that you have to work through. Maybe sometimes you can and sometimes you can't, because you've not learned that your body is not your own. It's your mate's. Defraud ye not one another, he's saying. Then there's that exception that's spoken of there. Except it be with consent. Underline that in your thinking. Except it be with consent. That means mutual understanding. It means a mutual coming together and saying, this is all right for this period of time. Now, I know what we're talking about. Well, it's a little bit on the delicate side to talk about. But, brethren, it's something I believe that's overlooked time and time and time again. Anybody who's been preaching very long have had to do some counseling. Listen, I'm not a counselor. I want to be a preacher of the gospel, and sometimes along with that, there are some things I can do to help someone. And one of the saddest things is when there is a problem in a marriage between couples. And I've had it said, and I hope you understand. I said in the outset, I want to be gentlemanly about the things I say concerning this. But I have seen the problem in discussing, and one would say, the husband would say, well, you know, here's our problem. He outlines what we're talking about. And then she in turn says, well, you know, the only way that something can be accomplished, I want this, I want that for the house or whatever it is I withhold myself until he says. What's the point? Why is it done? Because they've not been taught, they do not have power. Who had the power in that relationship? He says, defraud ye not one another, except it be with consent for a time. You know, throughout the Bible, there have been times for religious purposes that relationship has been removed. That exception comes in. For instance, in Exodus chapter 19 and verse number 15, there the Bible says, and he said unto the people, be ready against the third day, come not at your wives. There it is. The same idea. In 1 Samuel 21, in verse number 5, and David answered the priest and said unto him, of a truth, women have been kept from us about these 3 days since I came out, and the vessels of young men are holy. There were times that this was done for religious matters. Now, if we were going to sum up verses 1 through 5, in the immediate context, we would say that the husband and wife have mutual duties, giving due one to the other. It's a responsibility that cannot be properly dismissed. Now listen, I said properly dismissed, because sometimes that is dismissed. But when it is done, it is as pleasing in the sight of God. Now, that's the immediate context. Don't withhold this relationship from your mate. Why? Because you do not want them to be tempted in that area. You make sure you carry this out, because that's what God intends. Except it be with consent for a time. That's the immediate context. Let's look now at the extended application we're going to make. How families and Christians sometimes defraud one another. And I want us to keep in mind that definition of defraud. I'll be honest with you, when Jack sent me this, I pitched it over in the corner of my desk and I thought, why did he do this to me? To take the passage, verses 1 through 5, like we've done and dealt with, but he wanted me to expand this. Use the application in the areas of being a Christian. And I fought with that in my mind for a time, as long as my little mind will allow me to fight with it. And I went back to the word defraud. Define the word again. It means to keep back, to hold back, to deprive, to not carry out one's responsibility. Now then, let's just think about how that we can defraud other Christians. Okay, is that possible for me to defraud my brethren? Well, let's look at some of those. Well, in the idea, how by withholding that which I am required to do. Let's just talk about, first of all, exhortation. Can I defraud my brethren in the congregation where I am from that exhortation? Yes, I can. Hebrews chapter 10 and verse number 24 says we're to provoke one another to love and good works. How do you do that? Not forsaking the assembling yourselves together as a manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much more as you see the day approaching. What is my responsibility to exhort How do I do that? In the context of Hebrews 10, verse 24 and 25, I am to be in the assembling of the saints. Do I defraud my brethren when I do not assemble the saints? When I withhold my presence? I certainly do. I defraud them. I hold back that which I have the responsibility to give to them. The exhortation. Hebrews 13, verse 3 says, we're to exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. There's a reason, and I have the responsibility to try, to exhort, to strengthen, to encourage my brethren. And if I do not do that, I am defrauding them. I'm withholding that which is due them. I am not carrying out my responsibility to them. Well, what about my endeavoring to keep unity? Striving to hold together and be united. In Ephesians 4, in verse number 3, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit and bond of peace. Unity, my brethren, is needed in the church today. And one of the reasons that unity is not realized is because some, now when I say this, listen carefully, some are withholding their fellowship. I did not say withdrawing fellowship. They just withhold it. We're just not going to do those things. And if we're not careful, brethren, as a congregation, we withhold this fellowship. We are not really united except on Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday. And if we happen to have a gospel meeting. But unity is something that we ought to be striving for every single day. In congregations and throughout the brotherhood. I can defraud my brethren by not striving to be united with them, not standing together. We could talk about how that we're not to be in fellowship with those things that are out of touch with God's Word, that are not in harmony with Scriptures. But we're talking about our brethren defrauding, and just simply by saying, I'm holding back that which promotes unity in the church. You know, what does unity do? Well, it allows us to do the Lord's work as it ought to be done. That's what the Lord prayed for in John 17, 21, that we all may be one, as thou, Father, that art in me and I in thee, that they may be one in us, that the world might believe that thou hast sent me. Unity. And we can withhold unity. We can defraud our brethren that which is needed to strengthen the church and to show the community that truly we are the children of God. So, there is that exhortation. That is that endeavoring to be united. Also, I have a responsibility to those who are out of step with God. Do I have a responsibility to restore those who are erring in the faith? Is that my responsibility? And do I have the right to defraud them of trying to restore them? I don't have that right. Galatians chapter 6, verse 1 and 2. Ye which are spiritual, restore such a one the spirit of meekness. That's our responsibility. In 1 Corinthians chapter 5, Paul was saying to the church at Corinth, you must not defraud what you owe the church and that brother that's living in sin. What is that? Withdraw yourself from him. That he might be saved and the church might be made pure. Well, let's talk a little bit as Jack comes down the side. How that we must not defraud our families. There's a lot of things to be said in this area. But I think we most here understand. But let me just give you some ideas how that in within the family, the personal family, that we can withdraw with defraud one another. Fathers, husbands, you can defraud your family by not being a father and a husband, by not being a leader in your family. You defraud. Why? Because you're holding back that which is due them. When we bring children into this world, we owe them a great debt. Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. Sometimes fathers are not paying their debt because they're too busy with their sports. Sometimes they're too busy with their jobs. Sometimes they're too busy with other things to pay their debt to their family, to their children, to their wives. We talked about that intimate part of that relationship, but there's also the man has to be the head of his family. And let me say this. If a man is not the spiritual leader of his home, his family, he's no leader at all. That's a responsibility. That's something that's due my family. I must not defraud them from that great responsibility. What about wives? Wives are to be in submission to their husbands. Ephesians 5, verse 22. And Titus chapter 2, verses 4 and 5. That gives a good insight into what a wife and a mother is to do. The older women are to teach the younger women to be sober. On it goes, but the thing I want to focus on is that the older women are to teach the younger women. That means the younger women are to learn to love their husbands and to love their children. How do you explain that? How do you explain that? Why would they need to be taught to love their husband? Didn't they fall in love with him when they were in college or wherever it was? Well, yes. But by inspiration, we find that the older women are to teach the younger women how to love their husbands. It's not talking about that infatuation. It's talking about real love that ought to be between a husband and a wife. That sacrificial love. And you defraud your family, ladies, when you don't love your husband in that way. When you're not submissive to him in that way. And then it also says to love your children. What woman in this building hadn't held their child in their arms and somebody come up and say, well, you better learn to love him. You say, why, I love that child with every ounce of my being. But it's talking about a different, a stronger, a higher kind. It means you give them what God desires that they have. Make sure that you do the best for them. You provide for them. And do not hold it back. That includes discipline. I don't have time for that with your children. But let me say one more thing. Husbands, wives, children have that responsibility in a home. But you know that responsibility never, never, never does end in our homes. I look now. I see my four little grandsons. And I think, you know, I owe them. I owe them to try to help my sons and daughter-in-laws to raise those children so that they will know what God wants them to know and they can prepare themselves for heaven. Defraud ye not one another. Don't hold back what you owe. And you'll never have that debt paid off. Thank you very much.